Welcome to The Shilling Show. Regular guest here with us for many years, president of Murata Wealth Management, David Murata, joins us. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. And today's topic, the dangers of seeking utopia, which, gosh, this topic never grows old because we just keep seeking it. David, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So where did all of this begin? I mean, you know, there was a time when people were in a way too busy doing things to think about a lot of this. But if we look at modern history, I suppose, where did it start?
It certainly goes back as far as I can remember. It goes back all the way, you know, to the early 1900s back then, even the 1800s. There was ideas that man is perfectible and that man is good and that you need to have all these collectivist ideas about socialism and about the goodness of man. And it certainly has played itself into a lot of politics and history. I first got started in all of this because I realized that ideas have consequences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a man thinks, so he is. And that was really important to me to try to understand why do people have these different philosophies and how do they play out in history.
So this idea that humans are perfectible, meaning that, which is really contrary to what God tells us, which is that we're fallen and we're not going to be perfect in this life.
It's interesting today because if sin were red, everything would be pink. Uh-huh. That's just the Christian worldview. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I'll tell people that I'm a sinful wretch and they'll think that's kind of shocking to them. It's just so uncommon. Whereas that phrase used to be common in older times.
Well, it was in a song, a very popular song.
Right. And so to understand yourself as a sinful wretch is really to understand that you're not the kind of person that you should be and how deep that sin goes. And Christianity could be described as the more you recognize your sin, the better you've understood your faith. So the deeper you go into faith, the more you understand that you're not the person you should be. And if you say you're a sinful wretch, you know, people either look at you like, well, what secrets do you have in your closet? Mm-hmm. You know, as though that's something strange. But knowing that I'm one of the nicest people I know, you know, maybe that's just because no man sins knowingly, but knowing that I'm one of the nicest people I know, I can pretty much conclude that everyone else is a sinful wretch too. It's just some people have less understanding of their sin, and because of that, they think that maybe they're perfectible. And if you think about sins, you know, sins are things like, well, murder or adultery, or maybe not adultery, mm-hmm. maybe that's okay. You know, we kind of have these views of even the big sins today are not really considered sins. And so the little sins are not even considered sins at all. And sins are generally against someone else in society today, whereas sin in the Christian sense is against yourself and God, you know, at least God, if not yourself. But to think that you could do a sin that doesn't hurt anyone and it's still a sin is also a conception that's lost today. Maybe you're not studying hard enough in school and that's because of some fault in your character and fault in your nature, and that's sinful. That would be another way of taking sin.
It's really interesting to me, and I want to go to something that's very topical and current here, which is the condemnation. First, it started with the Confederate monuments, and, you know, certainly those were all sinners as well, but they also had good sides. We have history that would testify to that. But then we have somebody like Thomas Jefferson or George Washington. These were slaveholders. They're knocking over statues and taking them down all over the place. But the people that are doing it, to me, are so self-righteous. I mean, they never say what you just said. They never acknowledge, like, if we took a deep dive into some of these people and even their very recent history, we could see that they've done a lot of bad things. They've been in trouble with the law, and who knows what their personal lives have been. And yet they somehow don't ever acknowledge that.
When I was very young, I had certain people that I looked up to, and among them were JFK. I mm-hmm. thought he was a good person. I looked into his life, and I thought, oh my goodness, he's got all these infidelities and weaknesses and things like that. Martin Luther King, I thought, had some very admirable qualities, and then I looked into his life, he had all these, you know, infidelities and things like that. And then I thought to myself, people should be known for some of the best things that they do, and we can honor those best things mm-hmm. and not have to worry about the fact that they're fallen, sinful people and that they've made some terrible mistakes. You know, who can get to 60 years old without having made some mistakes that you look back on and then you think that was terrible? You know, I mean, one of my worst mistakes is I came home and I was tired and my daughter wanted to show me something she'd made. And I just kind of was not thinking, and I said something unkind. Mm-hmm. And that haunts me to this day. Just the fact that I wasn't giving her my focused attention like a father is supposed to give, and I wasn't honoring the thing that she had done that day. That was important. And so these are the kinds of things that will haunt you if you're sensitive to what sin has. And on the other hand, you need to forgive yourself because God forgives you, not because you just need to forgive yourself and have good self-esteem. There's a real difference there in terms of the philosophy of why are you forgiving yourself? Are you forgiving yourself so that you can just have the hurt go away? Or are you forgiving yourself because you know that God has, in his mercy, forgiven you? And then the minute you know that God has forgiven you, then you apply that to other people. Every now and then, the idea of sinfulness and forgiveness comes about and you see it sort of peek through in society. Most recently, you see it peek through with Will Smith, his slapping at the Oscars, mm-hmm. and you see Tyler Perry and Denzel Washington came and prayed with him. And you think that's a really touching story. But so often we only get ideas of God's forgiveness as being the idea of sin. We don't often get the idea of sin very seriously.
We're talking with David Morata, 977-1070 is the phone number, Dangers of Seeking Utopia. When we come back on the other side, I want to go to the break just a little bit early so we can have uninterrupted time to talk about some of the assumptions of the socialist utopian view and what the reality may be. The Shilling Show rolls on a Turbo Tuesday edition, 977-1070 is the phone number. David Morata is our guest. We're talking about the dangers of seeking utopia. JC writes in, says, perfectibility in this world. Thank the Beecher family, Harriet Beecher Stowe, etc. 1800 onward, you can perfect society through churches. The utopians, then, also the transcendentalists, etc. Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Blithedale Romance. Fictionalized account of a utopian community based on an actual utopian community, Brook Farm, etc., etc. I'll get your quick comment on that.
I said early 1800s, and I had forgotten all the early books going all the way back to Thomas More's Utopia. And I thought it was interesting about Thomas More's Utopia. Max Beerbohm, who lived in the 1800s, said, he read a little poem, "So this is Utopia, is it? Well, I beg your pardon, I thought it was hell."
And we see that in little vignettes, like in the Twilight Zone. I mean, this is kind of a good, a good picture of people who thought they were, like, if they were making somebody look perfect or if they were eradicating all the crime. But it always turns out bad every time.
An optimist is someone who thinks we live in the best of all worlds possible, and a pessimist fears this is true. So that's one of my favorite phrases. I'm a pessimist at heart, which means I'm always being surprised by something that's good, simply because often it's bad, and that's kind of the normal state. And I think when you have a good view of the fall of man and the sinfulness of humanity, you're not surprised by when things are bad, and you also have a forgiveness when it happens. So that's a good part of being a pessimist. And as a pessimist, I'm kind of one of the most cheerful people I know, too, knowing that, you know, we're all going to die and life in this world is fallen and broken and sinful and we're just striving toward righteousness. But there's also a value in kind of trying to beat back a little piece of the darkness mm-hmm. here. And I think that's what we're called to do every day. And when we fail to do it, that's also a sin. You know, there are sins of omission, just like there are sins of commission as well. And not doing, what is the prayer? I have not done the things which I ought to have done, and I have done those things which I ought not to yes. have done, and there's no health in us. And, you know, I remember that prayer from being very young, and that of, you know, not a lot of church made sense to me when I was young, but that one prayer made sense to me because I could see that I had not done all the things that I should have done, and that was a fault on my part. That was a limitation on me, not just a human limitation, but also a character limitation of not having the stick-to-itness to do what I should have done.
We have a caller who just offline says that we miss hearing David and seeing him in print, wish local people would publish his work, and they'd like to be able to get in touch with you. So you could tell us that right now.
Yeah, I'm at moradaonmoney.com. It's a blog site that I also blog on usually every week, and we'd love to get feedback on that. There's a contact form there that you can just tell us whatever you want to tell us.
All right. So let's go to some of the assumptions of the socialist utopian view. And a lot of these sound very dangerous and also completely anti-God. And let's start with the family.
For the family, if you know, the idea of the utopians are, if we're going to produce an equal and just society, we can't really allow the primacy of family relationships because families are going to teach you whatever they think is true. And we need to teach you about what is really true. And also, if you have a family, then you are doting on your own children. and that is also very inefficient and wrong according to the utopian view. You should have just as much regard for the strangers who are living in Africa, and you should care about them. But you can simply tell, you know, every parent buys their kid what we would consider luxuries when other kids are without the necessities. And the utopian view says, well, that's just wrong, and we should not allow parents to do that. So whereas, you know, in a different view, I happen to know a family where the mom went and did all these wonderful things for all of her coworkers and for her career. And I don't want to, I don't say anything against career, but she was not the mom to her children, and therefore she was the only person who could be mom to her children. Whereas it might be fine and it might be better for society, but it's not better for your children. Your children need a mother and a father, and they need to have an intact home, and they need to know that there's someone who loves them best of all. And that's the way in which the family works. We also do that when we say we should have childcare for all, you know, for all these parents, and we should get them out of the house as much as possible so the parents can go back to work, when in fact what might be best for the children is the parents staying home.
Right.
You know, so I even read an article, we should pay parents to take care of their own kids. And I thought to myself, well, actually, there's some truth to that. I understood why they said it, at least, because parents ought to take care of their own kids. That ought to be what they do. And no one else can take care of their kids, because there's no way that you can pay an au pair to care for your kids more than you would.
That's correct.
Right. You can pay them, and then they're going to care for your kids in exactly the proportion that you've paid them to care for your kids. And that's what they're going to do. You know, so taking care of your own kids, especially in the early years. So I'm going to say that, you know, 0 to 6, most psychologists say those are the critical years for child upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
That 0 to 6 is incredibly important. And once you get 6 and you're in the school system, well, hopefully you've got a good upbringing at that point, but you're not going to really change the child's character much beyond that. 0 to 6 is the time period when you're really trying to change a child's character. And then from then on, it's kind of building on that character. And obviously, 7 and 8, it goes down a little bit there. Mm-hmm. But it really, that one, the 0 to 6 age is the most important age when you're developing everything that you're going to know about the world.
And it's no coincidence that Biden and particularly the Democrat Party are trying to get their hands on your kids earlier and earlier and earlier. They're wanting this universal preschool going down to 3 years old. They really do want to get their hands on your kids before those formative years. And even after that, I would say if you really want to care about your kids, and we've seen what's going on now, so it's no surprise, you need to get them out of these government schools. And I'm sure there's some private schools that are bad too, but we've seen what they're doing to kids. We see what the agenda is even here in Albemarle County. We had a Zoom video of these teachers conspiring to pollute kids with anti-godly principles regarding sexuality, which in prior years, David, those people would have been run out of town as some sort of freak or deviant.
That's all very true. In fact, what was once tolerated is now celebrated. So
yeah, well, the Bible told us that was going to happen as well. Susan writes in and she says, listening to David reminded me that Alex Haley, the author of Roots, his favorite quote was find the good and praise it, even had that on his tombstone. Today, it seems the opposite is true. Find something bad, no matter how small and in fraction or how long ago it was, and trumpet it to the heavens. And this, I think, is, again, like, you know, the Bible instructs us to keep our mind on those things that are good, that are pure, that are holy. And so here we go as a society, again, focusing on every person who has done wonderful things. Let's find that wart and let's promote that.
Steven Pinker, who wrote The Blank Slate, The Modern Denial of Human Nature, I thought he has a very fair case. He's not trying to be utterly conservative or utterly liberal. He's really trying to just lay out what the evidence is. He concludes his book, I think it is no coincidence that beliefs that were common among the intellectuals in the 1960s, that democracies are obsolete, revolution is desirable, the police and armed forces are dispensable, and society designed from the top down are now rarer. He wrote that in 2003, and I think 19 years later, we've had a resurgence, and they're much more common today. In fact, they're the societal norm about all of these things. And Steven Pinker is not, he's not a Christian. He's not he's just a psychologist that understands language and things like that. But even he was tried to cancel him recently, and that didn't work because all the liberals came to his defense. They came to his defense only because he's famous and does well. They won't come to other people's defense. And so it's an exception rather than the rule.
There's a book called Sins of the Day that you discovered and actually obtained a copy of, and there was something interesting about some of the sins. This book dates back to the late 50s, but I thought it was instructive for us to look at least a couple of them in our remaining 2 minutes or so.
Sins of the Day, it was written in 1959, and it was just, it just lists sins of different people. And I thought I'd just read some from the adolescent. These are attitudes toward other people. Mm-hmm. Regarding one's parents as inferiors or servants. That's a sin, and that's very common among adolescents. Being unconcerned with their worries and troubles, so just not caring about what your parents' troubles are. Being overly critical of them, criticizing them uncharitably. Rejecting the suggestions and advice of parents and teachers on the grounds that they are old-fashioned. Mm. Not offering to help in the house, even if one is a boy. I thought that was interesting, too.
I have to remind one of my children that, when I ask him to do something and he says, okay, begrudgingly, but I tell him, I really would have liked for, I yes. just gave away who it was, for you to have offered to do this without me having to ask
yes.
you.
And I think these are legitimate sins, and they wrote the book simply because there was an unawareness of the nature and form of sin. So when I say I'm a sinful wretch, it's like I read all these sins and I think, yeah, that's me.
Another one here that I really relate to, and this one is being extravagant with other people's money. And I think about going out to dinner as a kid, and I don't know, we might have all had this experience where you had a friend along and they ordered like the lobster or something. Like, it was a kid. You probably shouldn't do that when your friend's parents are taking you out to dinner. You ought to be mindful of that.
Yes. In fact, I was that kid once.
Did you do that?
You bet.
And one or two more we have time for.
Being noisy, making no effort to do anything quietly. Being insolent, being impolite, doing only those things which please oneself and doing nothing to help others. So it's interesting that the nature of understanding your sin is the nature of understanding that you're not the person that you should be, that the moral standard is incredibly high, that it's a standard that we strive toward and that we don't make. And then that gives you much more charity than toward other people. So we can look at other people and we can say, there, but for the grace of God, go I, or maybe there was I in some past experience. The idea of Christians as these bigots that are always condemning people is not really the Christian view. Similarly, the idea of Christians who don't care at all about morality, that's also not the prevailing view. And yet in the media, when you get a Christian, they fall into one of those two camps. Either they're a Christian and they're celebrating ungodliness, or they're a Christian and they're condemning all this ungodliness. There's no middle ground of understanding their own sin and they're striving to be a better person.
We only got to just a portion of what we wanted, but I think we made the point very well today in looking at this danger of seeking utopia. David Morata is online at moradaonmoney.com. And David, a great conversation as always. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.